When we think about what makes a successful super app, it always falls back to the foundation of what makes you stick. We want to become almost an integral part of an individual's life.
If you look down at your phone right now, chances are you have at least one super app on your device. What's a super app? Well, it's a mobile app that offers a range of services under one digital umbrella, things like ride hailing, food delivery, instant messaging, and e-commerce. And to talk super apps, let's narrow in on one of the biggest in Asia. With a market cap of more than $12 billion, I'm talking about Grab. And joining me is Ken Leck, head of strategic finance at Grab. Ken, I think it's very fair to say that super apps are big in Asia. We have WeChat, WhatsApp, Gojek, and as well as Grab. What do you think it is about super apps in Asia that sees development moving so much further ahead than our peers, say, like in the US?
Thank you for having me, first and foremost. It's a pleasure to be here. If you look at Southeast Asia and kind of the dynamics of what makes Southeast Asia unique, a lot of people are, I guess, they have not as much access to capital, and you know, it's a developing economy in general. And one of the first limitations we discovered with people in Southeast Asia was the limitations of storage in their phones, right? In the US, you could have one app for, you know, videos, one app for your social media needs, one app for food delivery. In Asia, we really needed to kind of make it more compact, make everything kind of fit in one. And that was one of the reasons why we decided to pursue a super app strategy. But when we then peel the onion a little bit more, what we've actually learned is when it comes to the life of a consumer, and we started off as a taxi ride-hailing company to begin with, we only touched limited kind of points in the journey of a user throughout the day. Then we started thinking of how can we become more all-encompassing with a user, right? So that meant going to food delivery, where now we also touch breakfast, lunch, dinner, going into parcel delivery, going into grocery delivery, and that's when, you know, we start to become almost an integral part of an individual's life. And if you think about where we are today, we're essentially that all-in-one, on-demand kind of app where if a user wants something delivered to them instantly, we would be the first place they would come to and would think about. So that's really worked in our favor. It doesn't really end there, because when you then think about our drivers, the same proposition applies. When it was just ride hailing, you know, there would be peaks and troughs in kind of the supply-demand curve throughout a day. And where it becomes really interesting is when you add food delivery, you kind of increase that demand load throughout the day. So previously, drivers would have, you know, peaks during when people are going to work and when people are coming back from work. Now that peaks is kind of elevated because of demand during lunch, demand during dinner, and that really makes it a very nice kind of journey for our drivers to earn more income on the platform, which makes them very, very sticky to us as well.
Apps like the super apps in the US, they might have some of the other services that you mentioned, but they don't necessarily have a financial services aspect to it, which yours now does and features, I think, quite prominently. What is the reason behind that?
Coming back to Southeast Asia again, when we first started operating, this is a region that is very cash-centric, cash-first when it comes to transactions. And that actually made it very difficult or painful for us as a platform in terms of collecting money from customers, for us to collect money from our drivers, or even when you think about the safety aspect for our drivers, right? If they were to do multiple trips throughout the day, they would accumulate a lot of cash. That actually becomes a huge risk factor. And when we decided to launch our payment solutions back in 2017, 2018, we did it because we wanted to create a seamless kind of flow for our customers and for our drivers. So if you look at our app today for our drivers, we actually have a driver wallet for them. Same thing for our restaurant partners who work with us when it comes to food delivery or grocery delivery. We have a restaurant wallet where actually all their earnings are kind of stored in this wallet, which they can then withdraw at the end of the day or the end of the week, depending on what they're looking for. On top of that, what makes it very unique for us is we have access to all this data with regards to our drivers and our merchants, which in Southeast Asia, this is largely a segment of population that is either underbanked or unbanked. And with all these data points, we are actually able to extend, you know, whether it's cash advance loans, whether it's loans in general for their daily kind of working capital needs. And that has proven to be a huge sticking point with our drivers and in a way kind of uplifting their lives throughout Southeast Asia. So it's worked really well.
And what would you say are some of the key factors of successfully scaling a super app? And how do you balance between rapid expansion and profitable growth?
We started off as a company that was all about growing. You know, since 2022, we've really pivoted on this journey towards profitability. And in doing so, what we've really leveraged a lot on, rather than just, you know, cutting incentives or cutting how much we pay our partners, is really leveraging more and more technology to see how we can make our app more seamless, more efficient for our drivers. Everything centered around tech or product that's really helped us kind of scale and get towards this profitable journey.
And speaking of tech, tech is always known to be disruptive of traditional industries or legacy industries. And in the case of the financial services offering that you provide, how is that disrupting banks, for example?
Yeah, we'd like to think of it as not so much disrupting, but more of expanding the overall market opportunity, right? Going back to the example we talked about earlier regarding, you know, providing financial services to the underbanked or unbanked. A lot of the data points we gather from, you know, knowing what kind of income they earn from the platform, knowing how reliable they are as a partner or how long they've been with the platform, really helps us gather a lot of data, which then allows us to make loans to individuals or, you know, basically parts of society that previously were never able to access such loans. The way we're thinking about it is now we've done so much with our fintech business, you know, in terms of the driver wallet, the merchant wallet, why don't we bring it up a notch? Because the fintech business comes with limitations around how much you can lend. The wallets that we have, you know, a driver would not be able to earn interest on some of that savings they have in the wallet. So why don't we create them or move them towards this whole banked kind of environment? The way we think about banking is it's always a digital first approach, right? So it's not about branch banking. It's not about, I guess, very complicated terms and conditions. It's simple. And anyone from kind of any kind of segment of society would be able to understand these products and access these products through their smartphones quite easily as well.
Thanks very much for that, Ken. Now let's check in with our resident economist, Alex Holmes. Alex, let's dig a bit deeper into some of the regulatory challenges that super apps face, particularly in the West.
Thanks, Pamela. Super apps are certainly a challenge for regulators. WeChat in China has more than 1 billion daily users. Some might say that it's impossible to live in China without WeChat. But the ubiquity in everyday life that grants these technology behemoths such power has had blowback. Controlling what they see as too much unchecked power may well be one of the reasons behind the Chinese government's now multi-year-long tech crackdown, which has wiped billions off the market values of giants such as Tencent and Ant Group. While not quite as far-reaching as in China, there are many companies trying to push for super apps in the US. Elon Musk has publicly said he wants Twitter, now X, to be an everything app, which is a sort of combination of Twitter, PayPal, and potentially Dogecoin as a mechanism for payments in cryptocurrencies. Uber has some of the features of a super app, but it hasn't really rolled out into finance or e-commerce. And of course, all these features create a minefield for the apps themselves, as well as regulators. This chart shows a few of the challenges. Certainly, the handling of data is a big one, particularly for Western governments, which have implemented very tight rules around user data and how that's handled. Legal, privacy, and security are also big concerns. And like Ken was saying, these super apps in many ways replace the banks. So you've now got millions and even billions of people with money moving around outside the traditional banking system.
Thank you very much for that, Alex. So Ken, coming back to you, over your time at Grab, how have you seen the company change and evolve?
If you think about how we've evolved as a company, it started off, particularly during my time, when I first joined, obviously we had just merged with Uber in Southeast Asia, and that was really transformative. Exciting time for us to be in Southeast Asia. And as a company, we were very focused on how do we become number one in ride hailing. And we just started our food delivery business. And it was very quickly, how do we also become number one in food delivery? The experience of, you know, having SoftBank as an investor is a very unique one where they would push you really hard on growing, but at the same time, at some point, they also pushed us really hard on becoming profitable. I think that in itself was a very unique journey to begin with. Then comes this time where we were basically reaching our 10-year mark as a company, thinking about going public. And that's where we really, I guess, from a company perspective, transformed our leadership to a certain extent, where we brought in, senior professionals, people who have been there, done that, when it comes to making companies profitable, bringing companies public. And that in itself was a really kind of eye-opening experience for me. And that has been, I guess, part of it is my own professional growth in the company, but, also seeing the company mature in that sense has also been really amazing.
And just the overall, the company as a whole, is there a specific rationale or reasoning why so far it's stayed sort of within Southeast Asia mainly, as opposed to targeting some of the other markets that might have a higher per capita GDP?
If you look at Southeast Asia as a whole and how far we've come, we are still only 1 in 20 when it comes to penetration with users on a monthly basis. We have about close to 40 million monthly transacting users now, but we're still only touching the surface when it comes to how far are we touching the lives of people when it comes to using our mobility services, delivery services, etc., etc. And what we're really focusing on instead is how do we go deeper with people across Southeast Asia, right? So we were just touching about on fintech, on expanding into banking. More recently, we've gone into other sort of new products, particularly with, I guess, food delivery in particular, where now we also do grocery delivery. But in addition to that, we are looking at ways where we can kind of bring that online experience offline. And our merchants actually truly value that because in a way, we have all this online traffic, but one thing that maybe they're looking for is how can we bring some of this online traffic in store for them?
So obviously we explored how there's this conversion of a lot of apps turning into super apps, trying to address the various different needs and touch points of the consumers that they already are interacting with. What are some further building blocks that are needed going forward in terms of, for example, some of the competition, or perhaps not a competition, but in the West where we see, for example, Elon Musk and what he's trying to do with X, formerly known as Twitter. What are some of those challenges?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we think about what makes a successful super app, it always falls back to the foundation of what makes you stick when it comes to customers, drivers, or in our case, merchants as well. And the way we've really thought about it is we want to be that everyday everything super app on demand, right? So when you want something instant, you think about us. It really goes back to what are we good at as a company? And from there, see what else can we add on or latch on to make the service a lot stickier with whoever we're serving.
Yeah, so it all starts with a platform and a very engaging audience.
That's right.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for your time today. A big thank you to our special guest, Ken Leck, Head of Strategic Finance from Grab, and our resident expert, Alex Holmes from Oxford Economics. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to episode 6 of ICR Trade Season 4. ICR Trade is brought to you by IC Markets, a leading high-performance trading provider. Trade up to IC Markets. And thanks for joining us today. See you next time.